The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, here on Sports360AZ.com. It's time for another hostile takeover of the Brad Sesmatt Show here. I am Devin Henry, your host for today, at least. Brad will be back in studio tomorrow, and for a day that the NBA and NHL season is over, at least if you're from Arizona, you know, there's still a lot of news out there, and so we got a very full day of what's going on in the world of sports, not just in Arizona, but we're also going to talk a little bit about the national championship game. I'm sure that Brad might talk a little bit more on it tomorrow, as he has yet to here. So maybe a primer real quick for you guys. But nonetheless, we got to talk the end of the year for the Arizona Coyotes and also the end of the year for the Phoenix Suns. Maybe a little bit lopsided more so than I thought it was going to be. We'll touch more on that later in the show. Also, I'm going to try to talk as little as possible about Kyler Murray because basically, at this point, I think that we have had every single national and local media outlet explain every single scenario and why it is both good and terrible for drafting, not drafting, trading or not trading, he or they or so on and so forth. So I'm not going to waste a ton of time doing that today. But nonetheless, the D-back season right now 6-5 above 500. Where should the expectations even be so far this year? And with that being said, my expectation is that today is a great day because it's 410 day. You know, it's not the day that most people think I'd be celebrating in April because I'm a millennial. But no, I'll explain why this is one of my favorite holidays of the year. That's your rundown, and it's brought to you by Sagicor now. Sagicor, protect what matters most and do that with life insurance. Brad is licensed with Sagicor. Just, you know, give him up a call. Maybe even talk to Brad. Hey, no. But, you know, we don't have everything figured out. As a young person, I know I certainly don't have anything figured out half the time, but maybe you don't either. Maybe it's something that you're pushing off, you know? It doesn't have to be something where you're deciding right here, right now, this is the deal. Maybe you just need to talk about it. Figure things out. Give our buddies at Sagicor a call right now. Sagicor now, we appreciate Sagicor and their support. So we'll start things off with the national championship game for men's basketball in the NCAA. This was a game where at the very beginning, I declared, can we change this? Not 40 minutes. Can we just have a first to 100 game? Because defense wins championships, apparently, still in this day. That was an exciting second half, although I did figure that they would turn it up a notch in the second half, which they ended up doing. For those of you living under a rock, Virginia did beat Texas Tech 85-77. Head coach of the Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury, probably not the most happy as Texas Tech was in their first game in program history for a championship, but nonetheless, when you have two programs who are both looking for their first championship, I just find that so exciting for both of these programs and the fan bases. Obviously, whatever football stadium they decide to put this game is, it's going to be sold out already, but you know that the entire game, both student sections are hyped behind the basket, and when the game is neck and neck all the way down the wire, you're going to have that same kind of atmosphere. And I want to go all the way towards the end of the game. We have a producer today. Eric's in the house for some reason, although he's been doing a lot. He was out at Cardinals yesterday. Be sure to be checking out Sports360AZ for that. But this is something where maybe I'm just an old soul. Let me take you through this here real quick. So 12 seconds left in this game. Virginia ties it with a three. Timeout. Let's organize, Red Raiders. Figure out what we're going to do with this final possible shot of the game. Note, you're down by zero. So what is the first initial way to win the game? Obviously, the second you touch the ball, you shoot a three-pointer. I don't know, because this is a regular. This isn't like this just happens off and on. So, Eric, am I just an old soul? Do I not understand what the youngsters are into nowadays, or what's the deal?
Oh, it's probably a combination of a little bit of everything. But my friend asked me, Devin, to describe Virginia basketball. Because he and I were talking about the fact that I don't think in 5, 6, 7 years, we're going to remember more than maybe one or two players off this Virginia team. Mm-hmm. They're the best team. Yes. They also caught some luck along the way. Not that they don't deserve to be national champs. But to me, I basically said the 2018-2019 Virginia Cavaliers are like dry toast.
Explain what you mean by dry toast. Just no one likes it?
They're just there. I mean, there just isn't. They don't have. I mean, they have a number of. They work so well as a team, and they went through the gauntlet of the ACC schedule, and they made it all the way to the tournament, and they won the tournament. props to them. I'm just saying the title game was great. And I just don't think people are really going to look back and be like, hey, remember in 2019 when the Virginia Cavaliers won the national championship? It's going to be like, Virginia?
Now, really? If it was like Duke and Zion went off for 35 points, we'd be talking about how historical of a day this is and he's a future NBA Hall of Famer. And
or Texas Tech wins and Jared Culver scores 50 and after the game says, I'm going to the NBA and becomes like the next mega NBA star. We could at least look back and say, well, Chris Beard's a hell of a coach and they had Jared Culver and he's unbelievable. You know, like, I'm going to remember Tony Bennett, and that's pretty much, like, all I'm going to remember about Virginia.
But something that I think is interesting about these games where it's not, like, Kentucky versus Duke, it's not your regular powers, is that...
Loved it.
Well, some of these guys, they can really just blow up their draft stock. Maybe they still don't get drafted, but at that point, if you weren't drafted, you might get signed as an undrafted free agent. Someone like Kyle Guy, for instance, who just kind of went off 24 points...
He's going to play in the NBA.
Exactly. And I think that having a game like this in the national tournament, that elevates it even more so. Then you look at DeAndre Hunter, one rebound shy of a double-double with 27 points. These are games where you have the ability as – I don't want to say that Virginia is a nobody necessarily because obviously they were a one seed and they won.
Sure.
But at
their
the end of the day –
And their story judging, you know, coming from what happened last March
and what almost happened
March
a few weeks ago.
Slash April. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I guess it's just a situation where, yeah, I agree. I liked seeing the fresh blood. I was really happy that Duke didn't make the national championship, although I do love watching Zion. And I was also pleased with the fact that at the beginning of the national championship game, it looked like it was going to be an ugly paint scraper. And both teams sort of caught their rhythm offensively. And it wasn't like one of those knockdown, drag out, first one to 50 wins. So it lived up to the hype. I liked
it. And, I mean, the defense was still the dominator of the game, though, because you look back at what could have been the game-winning shot. Didn't even get a chance to put it up as Culver got blocked in the first place. And I'm like, defense, only what
that's,
you would think would happen in this game from the first half.
And that's their staple. I mean, Virginia, team defense, you're not going to find two better teams in the whole tournament than Tech and UVA.
Yeah, that was – I really enjoyed that game, so – we'll see moving forward. Like I said, I love when, like I said, Virginia's not necessarily the small dogs here because, like I said, they won. But when you see guys go out and just elevate their draft stock from someone who might have not been one of those guys who's going to be even taken as Mr. Irrelevant, I love the small dog stories, even though half the time, yeah, they're not usually going to pan out. But like Eric was mentioning, the story of making history last year, being the first ever one seed to lose to a 16 seed, and then come back the next year, be a one seed again, not only. Then you're trailing at halftime to a 16 seed again. Then you go out, make history as in the first ever title for your school in program history. So, I mean, the stories here were just really fun to watch storyline-wise. Something else that was fun for me to watch because I'm a media and technology nerd was watching the entire pregame with the on-court projection graphics. I mean, whoever made those better be watching that, or if they're actually working it too, like peeking. I'd have to peek down at the court because, man, the amount of pride that you'd have and how beautiful that looked was just so great to see. I'd be freaking out if I was working that. I'd probably screw something up because I'm trying to watch the projections that I made on the floor. But
I'm going to jump in here real quick.
Yeah.
Devin, we do have a little bit of breaking Suns news.
Uh-oh. Okay.
98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, is reporting that the Suns are expected to hire former Hornets and Pistons executive Jeff Bauer to a long-term deal within the next 24 to 48 hours.
Interesting.
So the Suns have their new GM, and this will likely signal the end of James Jones' interim tenure, but I'm sure he will be continue to be somewhere in the basketball operations. So.
And we'll see, because it's been kind of a strange deal where James Jones is kind of like, you know, it was said he's the interim, and then moving forward they start going, well, you know, he might stay in a higher up position, and I don't even know what the job descriptions are going to look like at this point. But
yeah, we'll see. I mean, the Suns, they've you know, it's just replay the same record from the last few years. It's
19
here, wins. Here we are the day after the regular season, and the Suns are, again, not in the playoffs and not even close.
You play over 80 games, and you're in the teens in wins. And it's interesting because I think that a lot of media members, this wasn't the news that we were expecting today. We were expecting maybe another, hey, we should have a new head coach. Because why not?
Day is not over yet. Like you and I talked about during the show, you would think by now someone would have leaked it, but we'll see. Stay tuned.
Yeah, breaking news here on the Brad Sesmat Show. You heard it here first, or maybe you were listening to 98.7, but you're probably listening to us, right? No. Real quick before we go to break, I do want to touch on Bobby Hurley, rumored to be on the top of the St. John's coaching search list. At the end of the day, because I'm going to shorten this up nice and sweet, hopefully, here, what he has built at Arizona State is truly something else. From a program where you know that if you're just an Arizona sports fan, you're probably going for the Arizona Wildcats when it's basketball season, into back-to-back tournament appearances, which I debate whether or not a first four loss is really a tournament appearance or not, but that's a discussion that Jordan can kill me on another day. Nonetheless, though, what he has built here is something unique. While it is inconsistent, it's still winning. It's still beating a number one team at home for the first time in decades. And it's still now having Lou Dort this morning has announced that he's going to the NBA draft. When was the last time? Was it James Harden the last time that an ASU player got drafted into the NBA? Do you know, Eric? I mean, I know it's been years upon years upon years because this program hasn't been the greatest past decade.
That seems right. Off the top of my head, I think Harden would be the last one. It has been a bit, but...
So
Lou Dort definitely going to get drafted, likely towards the end of the first round, depending on who else makes himself available. But
and you have a story on this on the website.
I do.
Just fresh off the HTML code, not the printers. But check that out on sports360az.com. We'll take a break. On the other side, we're going to be talking some Suns and Coyotes as we kind of wrap up their not-so-great season, although some big expectations might loom next year for the Arizona Coyotes. You're watching to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Devin Henry. As we tease back in the first segment, the Phoenix Suns finished their season last night with a 120-109 loss against the Dallas Mavericks. They end the year 19-63. 63 losses out of 82 games over the course of a season. Yeah, not the most fun statistic that you would like to throw out there when you're hanging out with your buddies at the bar of why you love NBA basketball if you're living in the state of Arizona. Nonetheless, the Phoenix Suns, with that loss against the Dallas Mavericks, before the game, decided to go out and tweet and let everyone know, Rashawn Holmes, DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, Tyler Johnson, Kelly Oubre Jr., and TJ Warren were not going to play in the final game of the year. Now, obviously, the difference between 19 and 20 wins really isn't much when you're almost that many games behind the next guy in front of you in the Western Conference. But nonetheless, it just continues to add to, man, why do I want to turn on a Suns game? Quick little story time. Might not be quick because I rattle on way too much. Back when I was a youngster, 2004, 2005, back in the days of Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire are at their peak. Leandro Barbosa and Rajon Bell are doing phenomenal, and there's so many great key pieces coming on and off the bench. Back then, on Saturdays, I would head out to the racetrack to watch my dad race sprint cars at a local dirt track. When the Suns were playing in the playoffs, they'd have Saturday games against the Lakers. In those games at the racetrack, the PA announcer would give us updates throughout the race night. Not only that, but then when he would announce that the Suns beat the Lakers, the entire grandstand of this dirt track would go wild. Like, that was the culture of the Phoenix Suns back in the day. Back at a dirt track, people who left home to not watch the game, back in the day where you couldn't pull it up on your phone, were celebrating watching a dirt car race to cheer about the Phoenix Suns winning a game. Last night's starting lineup was Ele Okobo, Mikal Bridges, Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, and Ray Spalding, most of which I never heard of before the season even started. So it just makes you question, what does the future of this team look like when you've had dismal seasons back-to-back, and then you could say back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back, so on and so forth. And that's where I look at what the 76ers did. Because I found it strange. I thought that the 76ers could not win. They could not become what they are today without veteran leadership and experience. Now, yes, they added J.J. Redick to that equation. That kind of helped, especially on the starting lineup. My philosophy is, yes, you bring in leadership, but they aren't going to listen to that veteran leadership if they're getting more minutes than them and the veteran is staying on the bench the whole game. Yeah, you're the guy who I'm replacing. Why am I listening to you? And that's a phenomenal point, to the point where Jamal Crawford goes out and scores over 50 a couple of games ago. Are you going to more so listen to Jamal Crawford if he's more of a baller than, say, some guy who's 41 and is only averaging 3 minutes per game? But once again, that's kind of more up to the uppity-ups, the coaching staff, the front office. Back when you look at how the 76ers got all organized and put back together, the NBA forced Jerry Colangelo to go fix that organization. Someone who was a large part of why the Phoenix Suns were successful a little over a decade ago. So looking at the future of this team, I was having a conversation with one of my buddies and going, they're not going to get the first pick. And they said, no, you don't understand. It's not like the NFL where the last guy gets the first pick. You know, there's a lottery. And I'm like, yeah, but we're talking about the Phoenix Suns here. They're not going to get back-to-back number one picks. That's just not how this thing works in Phoenix. It never has anyway, even when the Suns are playing well. You just don't get good luck like that. So let's assume that they do get the number two overall pick because the New York Knicks somehow finished worse than the Phoenix Suns. Ja Morant, or Zion Williamson, is looking to be the number one pick. More than likely, both players are going to end up being starters moving forward into 2019-2020 for the following season that they get drafted for. Zion Williamson has obviously been a phenomenal talent all year long. Now, Ja has been a little bit more behind the scenes because he's a part of the Murray State Racers. So I think that he'd be a phenomenal pickup because I don't think people would see that coming. But with the future of this team, you're going to have guys 23 and younger for four of your starting five. To me, that's scary. When you have youngsters, I think like half of them wouldn't even be able to go have a drink after the game if they got blown out because they're just too young. But I don't know. The question has always been with this organization for me, can the front office figure out how to organize this team to win games? Forget about upgrading the stadium because, yeah, to a degree, you know, it helps with organization. But when you have a lack of talent and a lack of skill out on the floor, it's just not a product of basketball that's going to end up being successful in any way, shape, or form. With that being said, the 76ers blew the doors off the NBA somewhat unexpectedly a couple of years ago when they started going out and making these runs into the NBA playoff. And once again, they're in the hunt to win the East and maybe even go to the NBA Finals. So with that being said, as much as I like to say you need veteran leadership, having young guns is very scary, and having Devin Booker lead your team when he's only playing three quarters of the season because who knows why half the time, the 76ers have already proved that drafting young guns can get you into the NBA Finals even if you don't have a huge amount of veteran leadership, which you also look at guys like Tyson Chandler who the Suns threw away anyway. So I don't know what to say about the Suns anymore. I have it down here on my note sheet. I'm going, you know, I just don't know what to say anymore about the Suns because it almost feels like a broken record because I feel like I don't necessarily have the authority to tell them what they should do in the front office at this point. Not just in my career, but standing behind this desk. I just don't feel like I should be telling Robert Sarver what to do, even though a lot of people don't agree with what he does in the first place. But at the end of the day, when the product on the floor isn't good, there is a multiple amount of ways to improve, and that's up to the front office to figure out whether you do need, you know, your 20th new coach in as many days, it seems like sometimes. But once again, that's not necessarily for me to say, but me as a fan and me as a journalist here in the state of Arizona who has grown up watching the Suns and grew up watching them succeed and now having to force myself to turn it on TV, you definitely want to see a change here in the offseason, whether it's gigantuan or it's something where they just end up like the 76ers and blow the doors off this place somehow. With that, I do want to move to a team that I thought would do worse than the Phoenix Suns this year, that being the Arizona Coyotes. Instead, they went out and they almost made the wild card for the playoffs this year. Darcy Kuemper did phenomenal this year as a goaltender, won the team MVP. And when your goaltender is your MVP, obviously that typically means good things if you're a hockey team. With that being said, when you look at who made the NHL playoffs this year, one thing that they all have in common is a positive goal differential. Only one team in the NHL had a positive goal differential and did not make the playoffs, and that being the Montreal Canadiens. Canucks, rather. My bad. But let's see here. The Arizona Coyotes had a minus 10 goal differential, which at the end of the day, they did win 39 games. They went 39-35-8, which was better than the Colorado Avalanche, who had that final wild card spot. So if you were to look at the Arizona Coyotes, who were one of the worst teams in the NHL last year, they're rising. believe it or not, this hockey team in the desert is rising to a point where I think that the expectations, the way too early expectations, may I add, is to actually make the playoffs next year because they were just so dang close this year. And you look back on this entire year, what was the story of the Arizona Coyotes? They were injured like every single game. Some of their best players were gone almost all year long. Some of their biggest acquisitions got injured and they weren't able to play. But nonetheless, this team had a shot with like four games to go to end up making the playoffs. Now, that loss about five games ago to the Avalanche in a shootout ended up being a little bit more of an issue than I think others expected. But when then you end up losing to the Kings only a couple games later and the Avalanche kind of rolled on the end of the season and played a better past few games to win, I mean, I guess that's the expectations. But with the draft being in Vancouver this year, you question, where is this team going as well? The Suns and the Coyotes are both on this collision course where they start at the same time of the year, they end at the same time of the year. And this season, the Coyotes were the better team, which is, even with both these teams being pretty bad the past couple of years, it's really something else. Clayton Keller had a great year. He led this team in scoring. Yeah, there was no 20-goal scorer on this team for obvious reasons, for the fact that it seemed like all of them were injured at one point or another, but 11 different guys scored 10 goals or more. In my mind, that was a pretty successful season that the Coyotes were able to put together. The Suns, not so much. But both these teams have the ability to get better this offseason. And I think at least one of them ends up making the playoffs. And at the very least, for I think the first time in a long time, the Phoenix Suns front office situation might actually be better than the Lakers. Who would have thought that was going to be the news of the day? Oh, wow. Coming up next, we're going to talk some Arizona Diamondbacks. And of course, what is a day of sports without talking about Kyler Murray? So I guess we have to mention his name at least once. This is the Brad Sess Match Show. I'm Devin Henry. So Eric Sorensen here is our vice president and executive producer of everything, or on mornings much like these, nothing. And he did something very exciting this weekend. He was gone and he forced Brad to be in the quick quirks and the jokes of Jordan Hamm, so I'm sure he's going to get you back for that on Thursday, but you were in Canton, Ohio, National Football Hall of Fame. How was that, man? That seems like a dream place to, well, most people wouldn't say Ohio, except for maybe LeBron James is a good place to go.
That's true. And it's Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Pro Football. Yeah, I said National. Yeah. Yes, Pro Football Hall of Fame.
They're very particular.
Yes.
All the major sports entities, when it comes to their Halls of Fame, are very particular about how you say it.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it is the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
Yes.
Because it's not just the NFL. It's also the AFL. There's a little World League in there, a little bit of everything.
The AAF? Oh, no.
No AAF. The AAF did not make it. But no, it was a really cool experience. I have an old friend that I used to work in the business with who lives in Vermilion, Ohio, which is right outside Cleveland. And so we made the hour and 15-minute trek to Canton, which is right next to Akron. And so, of course, you know, we went to eat in Akron, and guess what you see in and around Akron?
Kevin Love?
I wish. Lots of people wearing lots of LeBron James stuff. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is really cool, and I'd highly recommend it to anyone that's out in the area if you're ever in the Midwest. So
was that your first time there?
It was.
Was there anything that, like, you walked up on and you're like, either one thing that you just didn't know or one thing that you're like, I had no idea that this would be in here?
One of my favorite parts of the museum was in certain rooms, they have these big flat screen TVs and there's all these little buttons on the bottom and it's like, you know, the run and shoot offense, the no huddle offense, the 3-4 defense. And if you push the button, it basically gives you a little 90-second to 2-minute history of, you know, the run and shoot. The run and shoot was first invented by Mouse Davis when he was an offensive coordinator. Da, da, da. And it's kind of cool, like, to look back. You know, we all know, like, the West Coast offense is Bill Walsh. But I guess the Cincinnati Bengals were the first team to use the no-huddle offense.
Really?
Yeah. So things you just don't, you know, you see it all the time in the NFL and you just kind of take it for granted. But that was a kind of a cool look back at where all these ideas sprouted from.
So you've just had pigskins on your mind forever, because then after you come back home, straight to the Cardinals facility.
Of course. Oh, yeah. It's OTAs, you know?
Is that almost like a step down? You go from the Pro Football Hall of Fame to just one team?
No, because no, I like going out to the Cardinals. Yeah, and of course, you know, they had an NFL Network reporter, Steve Weiss, who's going to join Brad tomorrow on the stream show, and Pedro Gomez from ESPN was out there doing hits. So the buzz continues to be that Kyler Murray guy, and I think over the next. You've heard of him. I think over the next 2 weeks, we're not going to stop hearing about Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen. And apparently he is supposed to tour the facilities today.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray. I mean, Josh Rosen doesn't need a tour. He's been there for a year. But
he's been there, yeah. So, and this is one of those things where there's certain draft classes where certain players are stuck to the hip the rest of their careers. I think even if the Cardinals either trade down or take Nick Bosa or Quinn Williams, these two names are still forever just because of this offseason. Attached at the hip for the rest of their careers and what they could have done, X place or Y place or that place. But be sure to be checking out Brad's SMAP Football AZ. Stuff from, you said, Buda Baker and David Johnson you talked to, so might have some stuff on them. And, of course, the OTA is starting up and everything. But, Eric, if you haven't ever said your opinion on this, what should the Arizona Cardinals do with the number one overall pick?
Oh, it changes daily.
Like I said, I think every media member in this
changes
location
all the time.
I mean, they've named like every single possible thing that could happen, why it's a good thing, and then the next day why that's the wrong thing to do. So
there's no doubt Kyler Murray is an exceptional football player.
Yes.
He's a hell of a talent. There's a reason why he won the Heisman Trophy. My reservations are small quarterbacks that run a lot usually don't survive long.
And the number one example is RG3.
Of course. Even last year, Lamar Jackson got hit
up
quite a bit. And towards the end of the year in the playoffs, the Chargers completely figured him out. And I worry about that a little bit with Kyler Murray because he's a lot smaller than even Lamar Jackson. If the Cardinals are sitting there and this is all just a big smokescreen and they're just trying to up the ante to try to pursue others to make the trade up to number one to get Kyler Murray, if they could get the Raiders' fourth pick and somehow convince the Raiders to throw in another first-round pick, I say you make that trade and you only drop down to four, but who knows? I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm not inside the war room of the Cardinals, so, you know, we'll find out 2 weeks from Thursday.
And it's interesting that you bring that up because the Cardinals announced their preseason schedule. Week two, they will be playing on ESPN. And with that being said, in that game, more than likely Kyler Murray is going to be playing, whether it be the Arizona Cardinals or who they're facing, the Oakland Raiders. So, you know, did ESPN come up with that idea? Was this completely random?
The NFL preseason is a lot like Virginia basketball. It's also dry toast to me. So I'm not a fan of the preseason.
Take nothing from the preseason.
I don't care about it. It's just a money grab by the NFL, but that's a story for a whole another day.
So. I'll watch it because I like football. I like to see prospect, and like we mentioned in the first segment, I like the little guys, and you'll actually see them in the preseason. But you can take absolute. Cardinals were 3-1 in the preseason last year. Everyone said this defense is going to work.
Nope.
Sam Bradford is going to perform, which I thought so too. And here we are now with the number one overall pick. So moving on from there, because I can only talk Kyler Murray so much in a given week, and I think I've exceeded that time frame. I want to talk the Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's talk the only sport in season right now in the entire state of Arizona. Gerard Dyson, first career walk-off dinger to take the sixth win of the year for the Arizona Diamondbacks, now 6-5 on the year. One more round against the Texas Rangers, and how about just squeaking out that 5-4 win last night? Moving forward is what I always look at, especially early in the season in the MLB, because you're taking on your division opponents. You're taking on your NL West opponents. Next up, you got the Padres, four straight games. Yeah, then you got the Braves. And then once you're finally out, once you're finally not playing those NL West guys, three games against the Cubbies, four games against the Padres, three more games against the Cubbies, two games against the Yankees, then you're back against the Rockies taking on your NL West guys. So this is a tough stretch. We talked to Pedro Gomez about 2 weeks ago now, and I think I mentioned this last week too. This is a difficult beginning of the year for the Arizona Diamondbacks. When you just look at, you start with the Dodgers, then you go to the Padres. By the way, went 2-1 against the Red Sox. I'll take that. That's pretty dang good if you ask me. And then you beat the Rangers in the first game. They play tonight again at 6:40 p.m. Do they win? Do they not win? At this point, I'm not as concerned about if they win. I'm more concerned about how they win. And I'm going to compare this to ASU baseball. And this might be a terrible idea I'm doing. Not my first, not my last. But this big turnaround that the Arizona State Sun Devils have had came from the pitching staff for some reason. Last year, I looked at the entire pitching staff, and I questioned, can this team ever get it done? I was always concerned when a new pitcher came out in relief, because I never had confidence that any of them could close out a game. You look at this year, the pitching has almost been the reason why this team is one of the best in the nation. So my concern, and the very large concern I had back when they lost 12-5 to the Dodgers, and then 18-5 to the Dodgers, is how is this pitching staff going to look? Because obviously there's all this circulating questions and rumors about Zach Greinke. When arguably, yeah, you gave him probably too much money. With that being said, you probably wouldn't have never made the NL wildcard game a couple of years ago if you didn't fork that out in the first place. And also adding on to that, you expected to grow a little bit more than you are now. He's still probably the best pitcher in that room. So what are the other guys learning from him? What are the other guys maybe down in Reno trying to figure out to get back to the majors? My concern is more so the pitching staff, because when you lose guys like JD Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt in back-to-back years, let's face it, I'm not too focused on the hitting. Yeah, David Peralta is still going to go out there and gunsling quite a bit, but I'm more concerned about, can this team hold back some of the best? For instance, yeah, they gave up 8 to the Red Sox in the first game, but they scored 15. The next two games, they only gave up 5, including a 1-0 loss in the final game of the series. I'm okay with that. If it's a 1-0, 2-0 loss, I think I'm okay with that. Because at the end of the day, I don't think that this is necessarily a rebuilding year. It's tough to say. But I think at the very least, it's a year where you can examine what you have with your pitching, and next year be one of those teams who's in that wild card fight, or maybe even fighting for a spot in the postseason. So guys, it's Wednesday. That means I'm here. I'm sorry. But what else does that mean? We're talking motorsports. It is 410 day. What does that mean? It means it's sprint car day. Sprint cars, yeah, those four-wheel open cars that sling on in the mud all day long. So I got some video. The World of Outlaws NOS Energy Drink Sprint Car Series came to Arizona Speedway in Crane Creek, Arizona this weekend. I'm going to show you some video of what you're missing out on. And we'll talk a little bit of NASCAR too. I promise I'll try to make it interesting. If you think I suck, be sure to tell me at DevinHenry77. And be sure to follow my burner account, which is just roasting Devin Henry all day long at DevinHenry77. We'll be back after the break here on the Brad Sessmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ. Before we jump into my guilty pleasure here, we have plenty of Arizona news. Just a quick recap of what's going on today that has all broke this morning. Phoenix Suns, reported by Arizona Sports, they are set to hire Jeff Bauer as the senior VP of basketball operations. Arizona State basketball player Lou Dortz is reportedly deciding to declare for the NBA draft. There's that word that I was trying to find right there. So, plenty going on here in the state of Arizona. Be sure to head to sports360az.com. Click on the homepage. We got plenty going on there. We have plenty of stuff for you to read on, whether it's Sun Devils, Suns, Coyotes, Cardinals, you name it, we got it there. So be sure to check out our website. And of course, we're all self-funded here. So all these sponsors that you're hearing go over, if you're listening to the video podcast, watching the video podcast, I should say, those are all our partners, literally our partners that we have went out, we've created relationships with them, and we are self-funded. It's not like we have this gigantic investor going, here's a few million dollars, go make some content. Like, we're out here working. Before I forget, we have Kennedy Wilkerson, our chairwoman of the board, out here today. And for the first time, while Kennedy and I have been working together on this Wednesday show, we've had Eric Sorensen, our vice president and executive producer of Everything or Nothing here at Sports 360 AZ. Everything as in breaking or helping move along the Lou Dort story this morning to nothing such as me being up here today. Speaking of nothing, I'm going to try to make this into a something. This weekend, I took a trip out to Queen Creek, Arizona to check out the NOS Energy Drink World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series. 410 day is today. That is the Sprint Car Day. No, it's not the other thing that you might be thinking of when April rolls around. No, this is my favorite holiday. Made up holiday? Random holiday? My favorite not Christmas, Thanksgiving holiday. Easter holiday of the year. This is the day where I get to celebrate my guilty pleasure of Sprint Car. So, Candy, roll the tape. If you're listening on the podcast online, we have this here up on our website. This is a 410 Sprint Car in the World of Outlaws NOS Energy Drink Sprint Car Series. These guys rolling around all across here on this, I think it's a just a small half mile, like a 3/8 dirt track over in Queen Creek. Watch how fast these guys go by. It might not seem that fast, but, you know, they're pretty close to 100 miles an hour sliding that into the dirt. So they went out to Arizona Speedway. It was a great night of racing action as these guys are going too wide. Imagine sliding through a corner side by side, about as close to a guy as you get on the freeway, but about twice as fast as you slide into the into a corner there as you can see him roll by. But I love going out and checking out the World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series. Here's a couple more up-close pictures and kind of see what this looks like. It's about, I don't know, 10 feet tall or so, maybe a little bit taller than that, depending on how high the wings are. But it's called a 410 Sprint Car because of what the engine is, in layman's terms at least. So, Kendi, hop up one of those pictures. That is a NOS Energy Drink World of Outlaws Sprint Car. That is the Claussen, the Marshall Stenhouse Racing number 17 car driven by Sheldon Honchild. There you see Carson Macedo. That's a race car driver standing there. He's about 6 foot tall. So if you look at that race car there where the top of the wing is, it's not double him, but he's about 6 foot tall, and that's how big that sprint car is. About 10 foot tall. And then there's a great look right there. Look at the eyes of Brian Brown, the track record holder at Arizona Speedway right there, as he's going out to get ready to hot lap. And they got the visors right there on their helmets. And, I mean, it's a dangerous sport. Unfortunately, we had a really bad injury on Saturday night to a football player that you might know, Dennis Guile, who was actually played for the Patriots back in 2001 and played for the Arizona Rattlers. Unfortunately, he had a very, very bad injury on Saturday. It's a very dangerous sport, you guys. He's okay. He had surgery a couple days ago, I believe, and he's going to be okay, thankfully. So this is my favorite sport because I grew up in this sport. But it's great to see the World of Outlaws coming back to Arizona. There was a legendary dirt track here called Manzanita Speedway out in Phoenix, Arizona. That was sold very controversial move there with the selling of Manzanita Speedway. It was older than some of the most legendary dirt tracks in America. And the World of Outlaws series just kind of went away. This is really the biggest nationally touring dirt car series, maybe besides some of the USAC races, but this was a very big deal. It's great to have them back. A two-night show. They race at USA Raceway in Tucson and then Arizona Speedway up here in Queen Creek, and it was just great to have them back here in the state of Arizona. They've been here for the past couple years now, and it's great to have the World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series back. Huge congrats to David Gravel. It's a phenomenal story that these guys have where Jason Johnson, you can go back and listen to my Carson Macedo interview that I did last week, and we talked about what happened to Jason Johnson. One of my first professional interviews, we talked about promoting the sport of racing, and a few months later, he passed away in a crash at or it wasn't at Knoxville, my apologies, but he won the Knoxville Nationals, one of the biggest wing car races in the world, and he ended up passing away in a really nasty crash the following year, I believe, or might have been a year and a half after that. Carson Macedo was selected to drive that race car in the Knoxville Nationals and won his prelim night, took that race car back to Victory Lane, owned by Jason's wife, Bobby. And, I mean, it's just a phenomenal story that they had. And then David Gravel driving that Raging Cajun number 41 car went out and won at Arizona Speedway last Saturday night, which was a phenomenal sight to see. Some good racing, no cautions, I always love. They just run around the track and they race, and I love seeing that. So it was a great weekend, and real quick, I do want to talk some NASCAR as they went to Bristol, the last great Coliseum. If you're not really into NASCAR racing, I get it. It's long. Sometimes it's boring. Wait, are those the same people that complain about baseball? No, it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of an acquired taste, if you will, but it's kind of like baseball. It's long. Sometimes nothing happens. I just made that. I just made that connection. Why are you people... If you baseball people are ragging on NASCAR, like, I feel for you, though. We have the same problem that people look at our sport. No. But if you don't really like NASCAR, a good way to get into racing is watching these short track races. Bristol is a half-mile oval, high-banked, and Kyle Busch on lap number two, a name that you might know, he won here at the Ticket Guardian 500 in March, got spun out on the second lap of the race. No, it's a 500-lap race. Gets spun out, the rear bumper gets taken off by another driver as he spun out, stuck and stopped. He gets all of his laps back, and on the final caution, he decides not to pit. wins the race over his brother, which would have been really fun. His older brother was behind him, and he did say post-race, if I was a little bit closer, yes, I would have taken my brother out to win this race. So it was a very exciting finish, but Kyle Busch is one of those guys who you watch him, and this is someone who you can't ever count out of a race because he can always come back and take the win. Him and Kevin Harvick at Bristol were both in very bad positions. Kevin Harvick, who actually won here in the state of Arizona, it was the last March race back in 2018 for the Ticket Guardian 500. He won that race. You couldn't count him out either. He started the race two laps down because they did not pass pre-race inspection. He ended up getting back on the lead lap, and if he would have done that a caution sooner, he probably would have been in the battle for the win too, along with Kyle Busch. But it's inarguable that no matter if you don't like Kyle Busch, because at the end of the day, he is cocky, he has a big head, he says things that people don't like, and his racing style is occasionally over-aggressive in the world that we live in today. At the exact same time, though, he wins a lot, he backs up all the cockiness that he says, and he's good for the sport in a number of ways. Number one, he brings that competitive fire, and he brings that hatred. Everyone needs to hate someone. Like, if you're a Suns fan, you hate the Lakers and you hate LeBron James. That's okay. He's great for the sport, and he's one of the best players to play this game. It's great to hate him, though, and you need a figure like that in your sport. Kyle Busch, people hate him because he's cocky as heck, but he backs it up, which is even worse when people do that. But he's good for the sport. I remember when he won the race back in March, his PR person was like, dude, we got to go. We got interviews to do. And he's like, hold up. Let me sign every single autograph here in front of me. That's a class act, and that's good for the sport. And I absolutely love that as much as you're not going to like the things that he says in an interview or sometimes the things that he does on track either. But without a doubt, you're watching one of the greatest racers of the day, at least until maybe Kyle Larson or Christopher Bell start picking up some wins as well. Nonetheless, great racing at Bristol. Great to see the World of Outlaw Sprint Car Series here. Great having Eric on the show for the first time here on a Wednesday with me and Kennedy. So great to have Eric on the show. Some great conversations about Kyler Murray, the national championship game. Lou Dortz, he is declaring for the NBA draft. The Phoenix Suns, it looks like they are hiring a GM, according to Arizona Sports. That might be Jeff Bauer here in the very near future as the senior VP of basketball operations. So more front office changes. Will it change the trajectory, though, of the Phoenix Suns? We're going to have to wait and see about that one, guys. We're going to have to wait and probably wait for a pretty long time. With that being said, though, Brad is back tomorrow. You're welcome. I believe Goody at the Movies is coming back as well tomorrow. But for that, at the very least, glad to have everyone here on a Wednesday. Have a phenomenal rest of your day, a phenomenal rest of your week. And thanks for watching here on Sports360AZ.com. I'm Devin Henry.